don't you love the monsoon? One day it may rain in your neighborhood, the next it's dry. Boy, downtown got hammered yesterday. Some places almost 3 inches of rain. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with Ray Allen. Ray is engineering and producing our show, as he does so ably, Monday through Thursday here on the Buckmaster Show. Today is Tuesday, the 18th of July, 2017, coming to you from Tucson's Voice, AM 1030, KVOI. We've got our live streaming at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com, our podcasts and our archive, 24/7 availability for you. And my website, buckmastershow.com. Let's go now on the live line and join Beth Gorman. Beth is the Senior Program Manager, Pima County Department of Environmental Quality. Beth, how are you today?
Hello, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Isn't it great to get some rain to sort of clear out the air? It was getting kind of nasty there about a week ago.
It was. We had some really high readings in June and July. And yesterday, you were right downtown where my office is. I couldn't even see the building across the street. The rain was coming down so hard and just sheets of water. But it's wonderful because it does clean out the air. When I looked at our readings this morning on our website, all of the air quality readings were way down in the low 20s, even below 20, which is wonderful. Normally, it's sometimes in the 50s, depending on the pollutant and the time of day, sometimes even higher in the 70s and 80s and 90s, but it was down below 20s, so it was wonderful.
Before the rains came, there were some days there where we had the fire going on out by Reddington Pass. We had a lot of dust in the air. It was just really, really uncomfortable. And in fact, your office issued some air quality advisories during that period.
We did. Well, it's been a really interesting year for air quality. In March and April, last time we talked, the winds were generating lots of dust. And then we moved right into April and May and June, where we just went right into our ozone season, the ground level ozone. And we've had five exceedances of the EPA health standard for ground level ozone this year so far, which is more than we've had in the last couple of years.
What is this particular pollutant?
Well, I think, you know, some of your listeners may understand that we're not talking about the ozone layer that's up in the stratosphere above us that protects us from damaging solar radiation. We're talking about a pollutant that's created from basically human activities, burning of fossil fuel, mixing with some natural emissions. In the presence of very, very intense solar radiation, there's a reaction that occurs that these pollutants combine together and they form this very damaging pollutant called ground level ozone. And it hurts people's lungs, and especially people who have lung disease and children who are outside exercising and running around breathing it in. It is damaging to folks' health.
Is it a visible pollutant?
No, it isn't. At the levels that we have, you can't see it. It's invisible, but it's there, and you can get the readings on our website. But it is damaging to people's health. It also damages tires. It affects rubber. It's an oxidizer, basically, the ground level ozone, and it sometimes people describe it as a sunburn to the tissue in your lung, but it also affects rubber and some man-made articles like that as well, and buildings even.
Does tire pressure, in that you were talking about the rubber of the tire, does the tire pressure have any effect on that?
Well, it's funny that you brought that up, because people have been telling me that just when the temperatures changed just recently, that they were seeing issues with their tire pressure and their monitors in their car, indicating that they needed to put more air pressure in their tires. But tires, well, just tires that are sitting out in the sun would be affected by ground level ozone. But tires will wear, and they'll wear more when you don't have them properly inflated. So it's always good to check, not wait for your vehicle's monitoring system if you have one of those. Don't wait. Just go ahead and automatically check your tires once a month, and you'll stay properly inflated that way, and you'll save gasoline, and your tires will last a lot longer.
But why this change, dramatic change from the dry to the moist, why is that affecting like people's tire indicators going off showing that their tires are low?
Well, it's mostly temperature related.
Okay.
It's when the air condenses when it's colder, and so the air inside your tire does the same thing, and so it would indicate that there's less pressure inside the tire, so that you need to put some extra go to the gas station and put some extra air in there, pump it up a little bit. When there's a drop in temperature, usually 10-15 degrees, you sometimes will see that, and we usually see it in the winter when our temperature variation is much greater. But so I've been kind of surprised that we were seeing that. But then again, we were seeing temperatures that were, 110, 115, mm-hmm. and now they're down in the 90s. So there you go. There's enough of a drop in temperature to affect people's tires.
The little bit of trade-off for the pleasant rain is this storm runoff that we've been getting. And I'll tell you, I know in our neighborhood, there's some nasty stuff that is really out on the street right now.
Right. Well, and it's you don't really think about what we put on our yards or what we put on the ground or what we put on the streets from our leaky vehicles. You don't really think about that during the year. But boy, when it starts to rain, everything that we've ever put on our soil, any chemicals, any oil and grease from our vehicles, all of that, and also pet waste. And when we leave the pet waste out, we don't pick up after our animals, all of that gets picked up in the rainwater and taken down into the washes, and it's a real high level of contamination that we have in some areas because of those pollutants.
So you might want to find a way to trap some of that runoff and then, I guess, use it for the plants?
Well, sure. I mean, it's good to, first of all, maintain your vehicle, make sure that it's not leaking, avoid pesticides and chemical use in your yards, pick up after your pets. But if you can harvest the rainwater right there on your grounds, on your property, then it doesn't have the opportunity to escape and get contaminated out in our dirty streets. So harvesting rainwater makes so much sense anyway in our community. And so keep it right there, right where it falls, and then it won't get contaminated. And then you can collect it and use it for your plants and save you money and also save our precious groundwater.
Getting back to the exceeding the Environmental Protection Agency, the ozone standard, are we in a kind of a compliance issue here, or are we within the issue? Where are we right now with that?
Well, that's a good question. Now, our ozone season runs usually from April through September, so mm-hmm. we're just halfway through the season, basically a little more than that. And we've had five exceedances, but the way that the EPA defines a violation is you're allowed a few exceedances. As a matter of fact, you can basically drop off the four highest levels of ozone that you have in the year, and then you average the ones that are remaining. So we'll have to see, first of all, get all the way through September, see how many other exceedances we've had, and then do the calculations there. But it's not good. It's not good for people's health that we have reached that standard that's supposed to protect our health and then actually gone above that standard.
You mentioned earlier in our interview about your website, you do show the daily air quality there, right, on the website?
We do, and it's not really complicated to find it, so I would encourage people to go. It's our website is www.pema.gov/DEQ, which stands for Department of Environmental Quality, and then just look for the air tab right there on the homepage. There's even a link that says current air quality. You can click on that, and then out pops all of the pollutants that we monitor and what the highest levels are right there at that moment. So it's a really good source of information for people, and especially people who are trying to protect loved ones or themselves that are affected by levels of pollution when they're elevated.
Beth Gorman, thank you very much. Always a pleasure to talk with you, Beth.
My pleasure, Bill. Thank you.
Beth Gorman is the Senior Program Manager, Pima County Department of Environmental Quality. I'll tell you, some folks that I know are very happy, more so than all of us probably, Green Things, the owners over there, Jan and Jack, that the rains have come. They've got 13 acres full of greenhouses, plants, pottery, gardening supplies. Great place to visit now that the rains have come. People starting to think about maybe early autumn gardening and what to plant. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River Walk. On the web at greenthingsaz.com. They're located just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Shelley Fishman is next. Shelley's with me in studio. And as far as the market is concerned today, Shelley giving me a bit of a thumbs down. We'll find out what the reason for that is on the markets right after this. The Twisted Tandoor, the legendary Indian food truck, now has a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu expands on the popular Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, it's at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive and on the web at thetwistedtandoor.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport with 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects helping make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient, and improve mobility leads to a better economy and new jobs through the increased flow of people, goods, and services. More efficient access gets us to where we want to go faster, and that means more time for family. Working together for a better future, more at rtamobility.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Wednesday at noon, our monthly visit with Dr. Victoria Mazes. Dr. Mazes is the executive director of the University of Arizona-based Center for Integrative Medicine. Buckmaster on AM 1030 KVOI. We've got our worldwide live listening, we've got podcasts, and the complete show archive on my website, which is buckmastershow.com.
Shelley Fishman is a certified financial planner professional. The opinions voiced in this program segment are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
And my recommendation is to consult with Shelley Fishman, who is with me in studio. Hello, Shelley.
Hey, Bill. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing very well. The big story of the day, obviously, is the Affordable Care Act. The repeal apparently is off the table. I'm just curious, and I asked you just before we went on the air, how are the markets reacting to
this? It's not ever clear exactly what markets are reacting to. Mm-hmm. We all make prognostications about why the market is doing what it is. Markets are inanimate creatures, and as a result, they react to lots of things.
They don't have a heartbeat, but the people that pull the strings do.
But people are not necessarily rational. So right. What we're seeing today is the Dow down, the S&P down a tiny bit, essentially flat, and the NASDAQ up. So you tell me how the markets are reacting.
I don't know. In fact, I wonder why the NASDAQ would go up. Maybe.
Well, one of the things that we can say for certain is that investors get really cautious when there is uncertainty. And whether the certainty they're seeking is a good thing or a bad thing, investors can adjust for almost any set of policies as long as they know what those policies are likely to be. And then they can make informed decisions about whether or not those policies will have a positive or negative effect on their investments. And keep in mind, Bill, for everybody who buys a share of stock, there's somebody who sold it. So somebody who thinks things are going to go in the direction that is positive, for every one of those, there's somebody who thinks, no, this is a bad thing. So that's the way markets kind of work, is that there's this tug of a balance. And fortunately, or unfortunately, there's enough of a discrepancy in people's opinions such that markets remain relatively active. It's when you get consistency of opinion that very often you'll see volumes go down because there's less trading.
So what happens now, not just let's put healthcare aside.
Yes, please.
Yes, because we're going to be changing the priorities, obviously. Folks in Washington are going to change them. And I'm wondering how that will affect the markets here and abroad.
Well, I think there are some things that the Congress needs to get done. There's the raising the debt limit. There's budgets that need to be done. There's budgeting that needs to be done. There's a whole bunch of decisions around how to fund certain departments. And there's no consistency of opinion as to how that should get done, whether it's within the Republican Party or certainly between Republicans and Democrats. What we know is that the Congress is going to try to refocus away from healthcare now and try to get a budget passed, or at least try to get some tax reform done. And those things, if Paul Ryan gets his way, if the Speaker gets his way, are going to be done kind of in concert with one another. Now, there are some things that are in the budget that the House is putting forward that would do some upsetting things for a lot of people, including changes to Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. Those are things the president said he wasn't going to touch, but you know, who knows how that'll come out. What is going to happen is that we're going to see a lot of uncertainty or the level of uncertainty as to the outcomes increase as the debate moves from the healthcare debate and moves over now to the tax and the taxing and budgeting debate.
But markets hate uncertainty.
Markets hate uncertainty. So what we're going to see, look, we've got a Republican administration. Mm-hmm. We have a Republican House and a Republican Senate. Those things are going to conspire to allow some degree of consistency of approach that is going to bring us in a rightward direction from where we saw the last 8 years. Now, the Congressional Budget Office has basically said, no matter what you do, we're not going to get growth much over 1.9. The president's budget looks more to 4% growth. The House budget looks more to 3% growth. 1.9 is significantly less than that. And so they're essentially betting on the theory that if you cut taxes, you will provide some stimulus and growth. There's very little evidence around that. I don't believe it, but it doesn't matter what I believe. Mm-mm. There's going to be an experiment that is going to take this supply-side theory of economics and put it to some kind of tests. What I'd like to see is that they plan this the way any business would plan a budget. If you're the financial manager of a business and you're sitting around with your board of directors or your top management team and you're about ready to provide a 5-year guide to where you want to go or a 10-year guide, let's say a 5-year guide, you're going to provide at least three cases. You're going to provide a best case scenario, a worst case scenario, and a probable scenario. And you're going to propose the business planning, the things you need to do around those cases, around triggers, around metrics that say, if we get to this place and it's going in this direction, these are the actions we should take. If it's not going the way we'd like it to do, we have to take some defensive actions. So that instead of passing a budget and a set of cuts to certain things that assume the best case scenario that, say, the House is looking at, we should trigger the actual reforms based upon performance so that we can measure what the effect of this experiment is on the economy, let the markets absorb those effects, and then trigger the next set of policy decisions based upon actual performance. That, to me, is the way a business would do it, and I think it's the way a rational government would do it. However, we don't always have rational governments, and we don't always have rational markets, so I'm not very optimistic.
So you're not very optimistic there's going to be those triggers built in.
I'm not, so what I think is what we talked about mm-hmm. last week is we're going to begin to see more of the same, this 1.92% GDP growth, profits running about in the same direction as they have been running, demand positive but on the low side, and therefore reluctance on the part, even with tax cuts, a reluctance on the part of businesses to reinvest in new factories, new production. We're not going to see a big change in onshoring of manufacturing. That hasn't, that curve has been headed downward for 30 or 40 years. That's not going to change much.
Thus your recommendation from last week, which was park some money on the side.
Get ready to take advantage of weakness and also lighten up on risk, be a little bit more conservative in your approach, go for the kinds of investments that can give you income while not depending so much on growth.
All right. Well, Shelley Fishman, always with some very good advice. And Shelley encourages folks to give him a call. He'd love to talk with you. Easy to reach him. Just go to our website, buckmastershow.com. There's a link right to Shelley, and he returns his phone calls in a very prompt manner.
And I give this advice for free on an individual basis as well as across the airwaves.
And I do want to mention that, Shelley, you would your introductory sitting down with folks, there's no cost.
No cost for that, of course not.
To sit down and,
right.
and talk.
And then if it turns out that there's a meeting of the minds mm-hmm. and there's a good match between my talents and the needs of mm-hmm. of a particular client mm-hmm. or potential client, mm-hmm. then, you know, we determine what kind of arrangement to have for fees, and they're fully disclosed. So whether you pay me an annual fee or you pay me for trades and products that you buy from me,
it's all up front. All the compensation.
And always with the best interests of the client involved.
There you go. Shelley, have a great week.
You too, Bill.
Thanks a lot. We'll come back with Dr. Zach Guido, UA climate scientist. If there was ever a time to talk to Zach, now's the time. What a very productive so far. Monsoon 2017, this has been. We'll find out. Will it continue right after this?
The opinions voiced in this program segment are for general information only and are not necessarily those of LPL Financial or this station. Shelley Fishman, CFP, is an LPL Financial planner. Shelley can be reached at 520-940-0884 or at his website, shelleyfishman.com. Securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC.
Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant, named after the classic New Orleans cocktail. Sazerac Creole Kitchen and Cocktail Parlor is located in St. Philip's Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you soon at Sazerac, open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Philip's Plaza.
American Openings is pleased to sponsor Hands of Hope. Hands of Hope believes every life matters, and they're committed to walking alongside women to provide confidential, non-judgmental care so they can make the best decisions when unsure about continuing with the pregnancy. You can learn more about Hands of Hope at GiveHopeTucson.com. American Openings is a locally owned door and window manufacturer and is blessed to be a sponsor of a local ministry doing so much to protect life.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective, featuring regional, national, and international news, local opinion, and views from top national columnists, business and technology news, auto reviews, books, and the box office, plus sports and a look back at the Old West. The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
What comes to mind when you envision the holidays? If it means surrounding yourself with family and friends as you welcome treasured traditions, just imagine if those moments were paired with sinking your toes in fine white sand and exploring quaint seaside towns. This winter, spend your holiday with a sense of adventure on a family reunion vacation. At Bon Voyage, we specialize in bringing generations together through travel. This is the perfect time to plan. Call Bon Voyage Travel at 797-1110.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Zach Guido is with us. Zach is a frequent visitor to our program, and I'm very happy about that. He is a climate scientist with the University of Arizona Climate Assessment for the Southwest Group at the UA-based Institute of the Environment. Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Bill.
You picked a great time to be overseas when you were doing your trip to East Africa for climate business. You missed probably one of the hottest weeks, in the 130 years that the temperatures have been recorded here in Tucson. It was pretty miserable.
Yeah, that worked out quite well for me. I mean, I feel sorry for everybody else, but you know, June brings that weather for us. I mean, people that have lived here for a while or that just have recently moved here know quite well that June can bring very, very hot temperatures. And this year, I mean, I call it the 122nd coolest June on record out of 123. It tipped the scales, not at the warmest on record for June, if you look at Arizona in its entirety, but the second warmest.
There wasn't much cooling even at night.
Yeah, the maximum temperatures and the minimum temperatures were both way above average. So, yeah, and that heat wave that you just alluded to, you know, set records. I think it was a there was a 7-day stretch where temperatures were at least 109 for Tucson and above, and we had 3 or 4 days in which the maximum temperature record was broken. And that broke the record that we experienced last year at about that same time in June. So that was a pretty substantial heat wave that, fortunately, I missed.
The good news is last Monday, the rains did come. Summer rainy season began, and it has begun with pretty much a vengeance. We've had some very good rain up at our place in the central foothills, Zach. We unofficially have a little over 3 inches since last Monday. Mm-hmm. Downtown got really hit yesterday. So I think we had a deficit, a rainfall deficit, coming into the rainy season, and now we're about average.
Yeah, I mean, it's the monsoon is great because so quickly the narrative can change, right? Like before, July 10th or so, which is when the monsoon began here, more or less, or when the rain began to fall, you know, people were saying it's a nonsoon. You know, it'd been historically the monsoon starts at around July 4th, so we were a week late. But my gosh, in the last week since July 10th, we've had a very, very active period. Yeah, and as you mentioned, yesterday, the metropolitan area of Tucson got really hit. Central and western portions, you know, some people recorded 2.5 inches or more of rain. So that's a pretty big event. And you know, if you look at the Tucson airport, which is one of the gauges that we use to sort of characterize the monsoon, they're running at way above average right now. So yeah, we went from a nonsoon to maybe an expletive, or at least a holy cow.
Yeah, and the moisture in the atmosphere is really up there, and I don't think we can continue. There's going to be a little drop-off here in a couple of days. I think Thursday things are going to dry out just a little bit.
Yeah, that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And we've had precipitable water, the amount of water in the atmosphere, we've had levels of that be really, really high in the last week. And it does look like, looking at the weather forecast, that may change. But we've had this constant seep of moisture from the Gulf of California for the last week. And we've had other conditions like good winds aloft that have helped organize those storms and really push them off the mountains and move them over large areas of this part of Arizona. I should also say, though, that if you look at Arizona in its total, the monsoon, for the most part, has yet to deliver.
Really?
So only about 5% of the state, when you sort of interpolate from the data that we have, only about 5% of the state is much above average.
And so we're kind of in that 5% area, which is very nice.
We are.
And it's interesting, some of the old timers have been around a long time, say these storms seem to have kind of that feel of the way it used to be with the afternoon. You could pretty much set your watch by the storms coming in off the Mogollon Rim. They're moving in that direction. Is that because of this circular pattern that's coming up from the Gulf?
Yeah, you know, that is a good question. And I was actually having a conversation with a colleague of mine just about why there seemed to be more sort of what weather people call rim shots.
Rim shots.
Coming, so moisture coming down from the Mogollon Rim. And I think it has to do with where the high pressure system has set up. It's been basically to our northeast in Arizona, which has sort of facilitated that flow from northern regions down into the valleys. But one thing that I've realized since I've been paying attention to the monsoon for about 8 years now, 9 years now, is that no two monsoons are alike. I mean, you can go back in the record and look at the precipitation and look at the weather patterns and come up with, you know, if you look 50 years worth of data, you come up with like 50 different characteristics, 50 different
which
patterns.
Which makes it almost impossible to predict how it's all going to end for the monsoon season.
Yeah. I mean, it's a hard thing to predict just the weather of the monsoon, when things will fire off, where they'll fire off in any given day. And it's much, much, much harder to talk about what's going to happen for the rest of the monsoon. Like what's going to happen in August, I am not going to make a prediction.
And, you know, you brought up a very interesting point that no two monsoons are created equal. It's almost that way on a day-to-day basis as I've been watching the way these thunderstorms kind of form. Like yesterday, the storm over the downtown area was one of the kind of storms that just sort of parks.
Yep.
There wasn't any movement pushing it through. You can have a flow of a storm that will move very quickly through the area. That one may not give you as much rain, but when you get one like over downtown, you get up to 3 inches in 1 hour.
Yeah, that's right. The sort of bigger picture movement of the winds aloft were just sort of facilitated the sort of stagnant of these storms in recent days. And, you know, the winds and the pattern of the direction of the winds and the strength of the winds, those can change quite a bit. And that matters. And also where you're getting the moisture from. If you have a Gulf surge and if there's more moisture present from the east, you know, that matters. And then, you know, the frequency, if it rained yesterday, that can cause the monsoon in the following days to have trouble to get going. So there's all of these different ingredients that come together, and you really need to have the right sort of mix to actually have storms and to have organized storms that have a sort of a large fingerprint. And, you know, if you look at the record, only about a quarter of our days during, you know, the official monsoon period from June 15th through the end of September, only about a quarter of our days actually see rain. So it's not that frequent that you have these conditions that come together. And it's even less frequent when you have the conditions come together in a way that really favor sort of widespread rains or rains that, you know, are in Tucson and that move all the way over to Phoenix. So it's quite an interesting time to pay attention.
Phoenix is not in that 5% area, I assume, that's had real great rains.
Well, it started a little bit later. So I think its first rains in the city were a few days ago. And, you know, it historically only sees about 2.5 inches of rain. And in some places, I believe on Sunday, some places recorded up to an inch. So, you know, it's gotten, you know, already one event that looks pretty good for its seasonal statistics. And it only takes one or a few storms to really change the way that we think about the quality of the monsoon.
How was your trip to East Africa, your first visit there?
It was great.
You were by Mount Kilimanjaro. Yep. Is there any snow or glaciation still on top of Kilimanjaro?
There is. That's a sad scene from somebody that used to study glaciers. but yeah, we flew by Kilimanjaro.
Right.
We looked out the window, saw people hiking up, and mm-hmm. there is a little bit of ice left, but probably not for that much longer.
Had a friend while you were there. It was the same time period, was up at Mount Kenya, which at one point used to be very glaciered as well. And I think there's like a couple puddles up there that's left. Nothing left at Mount Kenya.
No, it's pretty sad. I mean, that's the situation globally when you think about glaciers. So
you can see it up in Canada too, in the Rockies, mm-hmm. how that has changed. But that's for another topic. Mm-hmm. Dr. Zach Guido, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Coming up on 12:45 on the Buckmaster Show, we will be right back with you.
The wet and wonderful monsoon season brings more than just rain as Tona Chule hosts local growers and nationally renowned plant experts for this year's annual Monsoon Madness Sale. For more than just plant nerds, anyone can come to buy the weird and wondrous and learn plant care from the professionals. Tona Chule's Monsoon Madness Plant Sale is Friday, July the 28th from 3 to 7 p.m. and Saturday, July the 29th from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Come see us at 7366 North Paseo del Norte or visit our website at tohonachulepark.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority is on track to deliver the remainder of the promised projects in the 20-year plan, now in its 11th year. A recent 10-year performance audit finds the RTA sticking to the plan and schedule. The RTA applauds our members and partners for helping us to stay on schedule and to improve our transportation network for everyone. Working together for a better future, more at rtamobility.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, this presentation of our program, this segment. From Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, they send their greetings to all of us here in Southern Arizona and urge you to take the 3-hour drive to Silver City, especially now. They're one of the signature events coming up this weekend. It is the annual Clay Festival, everything to do with pottery. It is a very big deal, and people come from all over North America for the Silver City Clay Festival, and it again is this weekend. Go to southwestnewmexico.org for the full listing of the many places to stay in Silver City and Grant County and the many recreation opportunities. The Gila Wilderness over there really greening up very nicely with the summer rains. Let's go now on the live line to Dr. Robert Hendricks, the Associate Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona College of Education. Dr. Hendricks, the former head of the Department of Educational Policy Studies and Practice. He's the former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District and a one-time Arizona Top School Superintendent of the Year. Bob, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. How about yourself?
Doing very well. Thank you for asking. Bob, when I was in school many, many years ago, we learned handwriting was a big deal early on in elementary school. We spent a lot of time. We had those handwriting charts, you know, for the lowercase and the uppercase. And I'm sure people of a certain age know what I'm talking about. But is cursive writing making a comeback?
It is. And in fact, if you remember on your report card, Bill, it was called penmanship.
That's right.
So you received a grade for that. And it is coming back. Cursive handwriting has been adopted as one of the revised educational standards by our state board. And starting actually in fall of 2018, it's going to be expected that all third graders through grade five will learn cursive writing, and actually join 14 other states that require cursive handwriting instruction.
What does cursive mean, basically?
Well, it's basically the writing with the flourish. Mm-hmm. How I would describe it. It's in contrast to printing. And it uses a different set of eye-hand coordination skills. And therein lies one of the proponents' reasons why they believe cursive writing should come back, because there have been some brain studies on younger children, and it suggests that cursive writing does stimulate the brain visually and also help fine motor skills. And so, and they also talk about the fact that this is really a different set of motor skills than you learn when you print. Hmm. And so it uses different hand muscles. So this is probably the leading argument why we should be revisiting cursive writing in our schools. But there's also another thing that children with disabilities, there has been some work done, particularly with children with dyslexia, and it's been determined that they have much more difficulty in distinguishing differences in letters when they're printed, and that they actually could learn better if they could distinguish the letters, and thus distinguishing them better can be done through cursive writing.
The experts that say that cursive writing isn't that big a deal, and there are quite a few of them, as you know, Dr. Hendricks. They argue that it isn't necessarily better or more important than just printing.
So what do you say to these people? And then those critics say, show me the evidence. They just don't think it's there.
Well, there's a good basis for arguing that it isn't there. I mean, the brain research certainly has some correlation to the eye-hand coordination, but it's not. It's probably not an argument that's going to withstand some of the opponents who say, well, there really are some other issues in the mix. For example, we already have a very crowded curriculum. We already have students who are spending the majority of their time, whether we agree with it or not, on the keyboard or using their thumbs to text. The research on brain correlation is not totally conclusive. And the opponents argue that this might be more of a nostalgic trip down memory lane, where we talk about something that we might have thought we were fond of, and learning how to write and learning how to communicate. And that is, there's certainly an argument for that, but it's not a particularly strong one. But I had an example a few weeks ago, which I thought was probably would fit in the proponent side. I have a friend whose daughter is a good student. She graduated from eighth grade, and her aunt sent her a card with a message. And the father said, well, what did your aunt say? And she said, Dad, I can't read the card.
Oh, my goodness.
Because the card was written in cursive. And so, you know, it kind of brings back something in terms of our past. Now, maybe it's a generational issue, but she couldn't read it. But I also remember when I applied for my first teaching position, which was in the late 60s, we had to answer an essay question, and we had to answer it in our best handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And cursive was required. And it basically was a handwriting test. That they wanted to be certain that as teachers, we knew how to write cursively. I would be willing to bet that we have a lot of younger teachers and younger parents today that print and maybe could not write cursively and maybe can't even read cursively.
Wow.
And so that's going to be a learning curve for teachers. The millennial teachers, I don't think, have this skill. Now, can they learn it? Yes, but I don't think they bring it to the workplace, because it hasn't been expected of them for several decades now.
Well, this
another
be...
interesting.
Go ahead. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I want to say to make it even more confusing, there are three styles of cursive handwriting.
Really?
You and I probably were taught the Palmer method.
Uh-huh.
There's two other methods. There's the Danielian method, which is more modern, more common today, and the Zahner-Bloser method, which is taught in the Midwest. And so the standards don't really designate which one should be taught. They're certainly interchangeable enough. There's just a little bit of different flourish, like the Q's are written differently, the T's are different. But you would be able to, if you could read one, you could read the other two. But it's the idea of which one are you going to teach. And so that's kind of open-ended for school districts to decide. My guess is that most school districts will opt for the Danielian, because that's the one that's more commonly used today.
Is this a one-semester course that the kids will be required to take? And this is in high school, or when do they take this?
No, this begins in third grade.
Oh, third grade. Good.
Third grade through fifth grade.
Okay.
That's the requirement. Third grade through fifth grade. And that by the end of third grade, third graders should be able to recognize both lowercase and capital letters in cursive. And by fourth and fifth grade, they should be able to emulate that and be able to copy it and write it and put it into practice.
Yeah, I said high school. By high school, it's too late.
Well, and I don't know, Bill, after fifth grade, if they're not going to teach it anymore, if it's not going to be reinforced, if it will carry through. You know, students tend to print, but again, you know, some studies indicate that most of the writing today, over 90%, is done by keyboarding.
Wow. Yeah, that's probably true. Dr. Bob Hendricks, thank you, sir. Great talking to you.
Okay. Take care, Bill. Bye.
Bye. Dr. Robert Hendricks, Associate Professor Emeritus at the UA College of Education. He is our contributor on education on The Buckmaster Show. You can find the full listing of the folks who contribute on a regular basis on our website, which is buckmastershow.com, also the place for all of our podcasts and our complete show archive. This afternoon, Mike Check with Mike Shaw and Ray Allen, a remote today from La Hacienda Mexican Restaurant. So Mike is going to have a full show, and Ray will be helping out certainly on that. 6 to 9 tomorrow morning, Wake Up Tucson, then me, Bill Buckmaster, back with you tomorrow. We've got a very full hour. We have Dr. Mazes, our medical contributor, will be at the top of the program. Then we'll speak with Councilman Richard Fimbres. Lots to talk about in the city. He is up for re-election, however, he does not have an opponent. So, in effect, he's going to be re-elected. I am Bill Buckmaster, along with Ray Allen. Have a great afternoon and evening.